Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Thanks for joining us. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to today's show on World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Fort Worth in Texas. Today is the second week in our series on finding meaning. And today we look at the Wheel of the Year, ancient cyclic patterns that give depth and meaning to our life experience. And joining me to talk about this fascinating subject is Drusilla French. She's a writer, a cultural mythologist, and an advocate for women. She founded the Foundation for Mythological Studies in Santa Barbara, California, and has also written many articles in the fields of conflict resolution, depth psychology, and postmodern archetypal psychology. Her first novel, Shadows on Soane, is the story of the murder of a biracial infant by white supremacists and the search for justice that follows. That's dramatic, isn't it? A second in the series, Solstice on Ice, follows a matriarchal family as they prepare for the winter solstice in practical spells to unravel family secrets. So I can tell it's going to be an intense and fascinating show. So it's a real pleasure to welcome Drusilla French to World Spirituality. Welcome.
Thank you.
So those are dramatic titles and dramatic stories, aren't they? I can't wait to read them now that I read that little synopsis. That's pretty amazing.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoy them. I'm working on a third, and it's called Divining Women. So it's the third in the series.
Right. And is that based on a part of the year as well?
Is that based on what?
Is that based on part of the year, you know, the Wheel of the Year?
Right. It's the it's the in bulk session, and it's both, all of them take place in Colorado, and they're one family. So
right.
This is the third in the series.
Of course, we just passed in bulk, didn't we? That happens around, February 2nd, something like that. So this is the sort of season of in bulk right now.
Yes, it is. This year it was February 2nd and 3rd.
Right. Well, let's talk about that. The Wheel of the Year, and many of us may be familiar with it. Some, it's a new concept, but basically it's based around the cycles of the year, and we're familiar with four of them, you know, because we talk about them in common parlance, the solstices in the winter and summer, and then the equinoxes in spring and fall. But then there's also what we call the cross-quarter days, isn't there, that intersect those four great parts of the year, and in bulk is one. Its opposite, of course, is in early August, and then there's the May Day celebration, sort of Beltane around May 1st, and then it's correspondent, which would be the end of October, Soane, and we're familiar with it again in more common talk as the Halloween, I guess, the Halloween season. So
right.
a lot of people say these are ancient. Some people say, well, they're kind of ancient, but they're sort of a modern day overlay. You know, there's ancient aspects to them, but a lot of it comes out of sort of neo-paganism or Wiccan thinking. Are they truly ancient, do you think, or is it a modern reimagining of things?
Both of those things are true. You're correct in that the neo-pagans sort of recognize the Celtic calendar and have created rituals and made it their own. But originally, it was a way of marking the year. When you think about a time when there was no electricity, people were illiterate, and we're talking pre-Christian, so we're talking about a sort of roadmap, if you will, a psychological but also practical roadmap to get through the year. So in the tradition, there was a period of a certain kind of work that you needed to do to keep your farm going and keep yourself alive. And then you would have a Sabbat, which was a period of rest or a holiday, a festival, and then you would begin again. And they alternated between focusing on plants and animals. So that it was a very practical kind of construct to sort of keep people on track and give them a sense of participation in the cycle. But what has always interested me as a psychologist is that it's a very interesting roadmap to think about the path of the psyche in another cycle of your life.
Right. And it has resonance for me with Buddhism, you know, because there's the eight-spoked wheel of the Buddhist teachings as well. So kind of interlinked with that as well. I think you see these correspondences throughout lots of religions and cultures as well, you know.
That's
and like you said, it's based a lot around the year, isn't it? The cycles of the year and harvest and planting and then fallow times and et cetera, you know.
It's originally an agrarian construct that,
I think,
you're correct, Wiccans and neo-pagans have taken, but that's the way religions build on top of each other. They are all intertwined, actually.
Right. Well, and I think that, you know, our society right now, we're feeling so cut off in some ways from Mother Nature and from the cycles of things that we yearn for it, you know. And I think that's why there's such an interest right now in returning to that agrarian understanding, you know, that we are connected to nature, right? And it gives us a deeper meaning in our lives. I mean, I'm very fascinated with it myself. You know, I've been doing a lot of birding lately because it's a wonderful time of year to look at birds. You know, they're very active, even though the nature is sort of dormant right now. It's getting ready for spring, you know. Then they'll be breeding soon, you know, they move south in the winter and north in the summer some, and then others come here in the winter from the south and go back, so there's again that cycle, you know. And it's fascinating to understand that and to feel that and to know that there's something going on more than just human commerce, right? There's a whole energy that's happening in our planet that is beyond just us.
Yes, and I think you touch on the energy of Imbolc, which is a sort of it's still wintry enough that it's an inner-directed period. If you think about it, it's not in a farmer's life or an agrarian life. It's not a time of huge labor, but it is a time when you finally feel like you've made it through winter. You probably are going to survive. And the question as a depth psychology of Imbolc is, what is budding or what is what seed is beginning to sprout in my psyche? And what is it's a time of release of the past and embracing what is a sort of regeneration. spring comes again, but every spring is not identical. Every spring is brand new. And that's the question. I think it's important right now in the situation we're all living in, is to see if we can have a faith in a regeneration of values and human compassion, kindness, creativity, what is being born in my psyche. Because, frankly, it's been a rough winter in our country. It's been a rough winter on the planet. And so this is the time when you think about what within me yearns to be born. What is going to be a new beginning in my psyche and in my connection to the whole?
Yes, absolutely. And I like the idea that, you know, there is this regeneration. And Charles Fillmore, co-founder of Unity, talked a lot about that, actually, that word, particularly regeneration. And it's the idea that no matter how dead things are, right, no matter how the phoenix is dissolved in the ashes, you know, there is that rebirth. And I think it's a wonderful symbology for all of us. You know, it's not over until it's over, as they say. You know,
yes,
that wonderful things can happen. And sometimes things don't happen in the way we think, right? The solution is not found. Was it Einstein that said that? At the same level as the problem, right? We have to go deeper or higher to find it. And so that transformative quality is important. Let me ask you one question. It seems to me that each of these days, these 8 days of the year, this cycle, has a resonance to fire or light in some way, right? And each one has a sort of a different view of the light, but they seem to be important in each one. Because I'm thinking of Imbolc, you know, which is in the Christian tradition, that the overlay there is Candlemas, right? Which is the blessing of the candles for the coming year, which is, again, indicative of things coming, right? We know that.
Well,
that
there are of the there are four fire sabbats, but there's also water and air. So, but you're right. Imbolc is a fire sabbat, and it is the sort of the relighting. I think Candlemas probably has a relationship there with its origins in Europe. So. But I don't think the two are directly related.
Right, right.
But their orientation to the natural cycle that we're all connected to.
Right, right, right. Okay. So the other elements, like you said, there's water involved. So I imagine that there's all the elements are involved in these days as well, right? So to get a fully rounded understanding of it, we have to connect to all aspects of the natural cycle, right? Not just to fire.
Sort of like astrology has the same kinds of connection to the elements.
Right.
Fire signs and water signs and air signs, and I don't know that much about astrology to tell you the truth, but it is also of a wheel of the year.
And it sort of ties in for me with tarot as well, for people who are into, you know, reading tarot cards, because that, you know, that's based around the four elements as well. And but also transcends that, you know, because there's the greater arcana, which is more archetypes and such. So yeah, that's a very resonant system for people who are, you know, find that to be meaningful for themselves. But I think it links very closely into the wheel of the year as well.
That's right. I think whether you were talking about tarot or we're talking about the Celtic wheel of the year invites a very unsophisticated audience to resonate with the images that are occurring around them. And that's kind of what tarot does at a more complicated level. But it's, if you think about imagining yourself in a world where you're like just beginning to see things bud, just beginning to see the bulbs are shooting up, as you said, the birds are beginning to mate and lay think about what they're going, where they're going to build their nest and lay their eggs. And that's what this time of the year calls forth. And it is rather image-based, I think. And it invites you, just as the tarot does, to say, what is resonating with you with this image? What do you think you're being led to manifest or think about or create?
Right. Yeah, beautifully put. Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this. I've been reading a book called The Old Ways by Robert McFarlane. He's a professor in Cambridge, but he's written a lot of books about landscape and his walks through landscape. You know, the landscape is a living thing for him on all levels, psychologically, emotionally, as well as physically. And so I've been walking through some parts of my own town here in Fort Worth, you know, and enjoying the bluffs and the bottomlands, you know, because as I go towards the places where the birds are, you know, I notice the landscape, and people say, oh, well, you're in the prairie, it's all flat. Well, yeah, it's kind of flat, but there's also still subtle topographical differences, right? So we don't see them if we're in on the motorway or on the highway or whatever, but if we get off and walk or just follows old roads, we notice the topography a little more, and it's actually quite fascinating, because then you sort of begin to identify with it, right? And there's you see old trees, and of course I see the birds, but you know, there's all kinds of things that are hidden if you're rushing by in a car. And so to slow down and walking pace is often effective, because that's when you can really touch the earth, right, and begin to see things you might not see otherwise.
Oh, I find the Texas landscape very engaging. To say it's just the prairie is to miss the point.
Right,
there's a lot
exactly.
going on there. There's a lot going on in Texas, and the geography of it is really interesting, or it was to me. I was born in Alpine, way out in Big Bend country, and it too has its own amazing landscape, and but I also grew up in Fort Worth, as a matter of fact. So.
Right, I knew that. So yeah, you're obviously familiar with some of the landscape around here, and I would say for folks listening, because we're not all, you know, living in Fort Worth or whatever, you know, everywhere we are is valuable, right? And so I invite everybody to look around at your own environment. Even the most seemingly tawdry places can be quite fascinating, you know, because there's things hidden there that if you don't see unless you look. And I think go out on a walk, take a look around, and connect with nature, and especially at this time when we're, you know, in bulk, we're sort of a gathering in of energies before they burst forth into spring. And so it's a powerful time. I'm a big advocate of fallow times. I don't know about you, Drusilla, but it's important, isn't it, to have times when nothing seems to be happening, right?
Right. And yet, and at this point, a lot, really a lot is happening. So if you connect with the images that are out in your world, you can sense a feeling of expectation.
Yes.
We're on the brink of something happening. And I think it's a good thing to turn within and go, what is happening with me? What is there in my soul that is going to bloom and perhaps bring a sense of renewal from a time that has been, at least in my life, difficult? I read an article that, don't ask me where, I read so many different places, but this article said that the last decade was the decade of unraveling. And I thought that was a very accurate observation. We have gone through a time of unraveling. It would be nice to think that we are at a point where we're regenerating or recreating something, because, as you said, I'm a mythologist, and what that means is that I look at the world, that we all live in a story, and it's intolerable for human beings to have no sense of story, no sense of place, no sense of order and a myth that is the container for their lives. And a lot of those mythologies have indeed become ragged. They're unraveling. And this is a very scary, disorienting kind of experience. But I think we're called to maybe reweave, reconstruct. Postmoderns talk about a lot of deconstruction. I think we've done enough deconstructing. Maybe it's time for us to reconstruct.
Right. And, you know, various sides of the arguments sort of want to reconstruct in their own way, right? And we've got this sort of popularist tribal way of doing things, and then other people are sort of looking for something maybe a little more subtle than that. But you can understand that there's this yearning to reimagine our country, first of all, but also our world, because I think it's not just happening in the U.S., it's happening around the world.
Globally. And the instinct is, I mean, it generates fear. If I don't know who I belong to or where I belong, and it's happening in terms of family, tribe, nation, planet. I mean, it really is. Religions are all going through a time of unraveling, and people respond. They are experiencing fear, but fear is a very uncomfortable emotion, which we frequently replace with anger or hatred. And I think that we're seeing that work out. It seems to me like everybody is sort of looking for who they should be hating right now. And this is not a very good place to be.
No, absolutely.
Far better is to say, I think we're being called to a level of acceptance that things have unraveled. They won't be the same. They'll never be the same. We will never live in the same stories that we have lived in the past. And we are being called to create a new mythology. And right now, I don't think our country is doing a very good job of it. particularly people like who are involved in religions like Unity, which is not so much of a container as a more, in my observation, more fluid. But we do see in that religion a desire to at least say we stand for kindness, we stand for acceptance.
Absolutely.
We haven't figured out what the container is, and we may never exactly figure it out. But the notion of religion is strictly orthodox and insistent on adherence.
Hold that thought, Drusilla. We're at the break. We need to go to messages from Unity. Join us in a couple of minutes. We won't be long. Come back now.
Experience the difference. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Drusilla French, and we're talking about the Wheel of the Year, which is an ancient Celtic and perhaps more modern neo-pagan understanding of the cycles of the seasons, and which underpin everything, really, because we are in the cycle whether we're aware of it or not. And we were talking about, at the end of the first segment, the idea that in some sense we've unraveled a little bit in our modern day world, and looking for meaning is becoming more difficult because we all have so many different views of what's important and what has meaning. And this mm-hmm. can be a disconcerting thing, as we said, or it can also be a something that's exciting because we get to rebuild, we get to reimagine. But of course, everybody reimagines in their own way. And we ended the segment by talking about unity and what we accept and understand in unity, you know, which is a fairly amorphous thing because there's no such thing as a silo in unity. We try and expand it as broad as we can. The only downside to that is it's hard to explain who we are, you know, in a culture that wants to have sureties, right? We want to know. It's hard to say, well, what unity is, but that's part of its strength, I think, isn't it? Because it's based on principle rather than dogma. But I know part of what the work that's happening at the Unity headquarters right now is trying to reimagine what unity is going to be for the next 50 or 100 years. And so we have to know who we are. So it's an interesting thing. And as you mentioned, Drusilla, it seems that all churches, you know, are struggling in this regard, you know, to be relevant in a hyper-changing world.
Right. And when you're faced with that kind of psychological discomfort or angst, for some, they look back. There must be some way to put the genie back in the bottle. There must be some way to enforce orthodoxy. But for me, I'm looking for those people who have already surrendered to the fact that you cannot go back. You're never going back. Life is never going to be the way it was before, and that we're going to have to tolerate this time of uncertainty and steer by something rather than an orthodoxy, but more of a kind of sense of integrity and what is important to me. I would say that what's interesting about Imbolc is it is a very grounded time. And you mentioned the candles and in this time of the year, as opposed to, say, when we're talking about the winter solstice, the candle is like, what is my light? What am I going to steer by? What's my inner light? As opposed to, boy, we're headed into the longest nights and it's cold and it's a long time and up the sort of, light a candle in the darkness. We're embracing the fact that the days are growing longer, the days are growing warmer, and there's a groundedness about this time. And as you said, go out and walk, feel the earth. You will have days when you can actually feel the sun on your face. And wherever you are, something is coming up through the ground and something is emerging in your heart. And that's what you pay attention to when the anxiety and the fear that comes. And if you think about a time when you were trying to live off of what you managed to store in October, I'm sure there's a lot of, will this food last? Will the animals survive? Will I survive the cold? And this is the time in the year where the answer is, yes, you pretty much made it. it through.
Thank goodness. It was touch and go for a while. Yeah, it reminds me Game of Thrones, where the tagline is winter is coming. And it seems like winter's coming all the time sometimes, you know. We could use a little spring, a little warmth amidst the craziness.
I think the sort of anxiety that this unraveling brings, we need to live in it with faith and kindness and love. And when we're tempted to hate, or when we're tempted to go to war with those who are scrambling, I admit it's very hard for me to have compassion for people who are trying to force rules, laws, things on me that I rejected a long time ago. But I think as a psychologist, but also as a spiritual person, these are reactions to anxiety, and I have to be compassionate about that.
Right.
And when I work with clients, it's like, this is a time when you have to be gentle with yourself about your anxiety and not fall into and create within yourself something you really don't want. You really don't want to be a hater. You really don't want to be a punisher, a person who is lashing out at others because of your fear. And so that is, I think, the lesson of Imbolc. The sun does come up and spring will come, and it's a more exuberant Sabbat than this one, but there's such a gentle interior grounding that comes with Imbolc that I really think it's a part of the year to cherish.
Yes. Well, you know, a couple of weeks ago, my wife and I had a sort of a tipping point moment where we were watching some show that we usually watch on a regular basis because it represents a view that we agree with, you know. But it took a turn on the show where it seemed like numerous things were happening where it was just ugly. Heads were exploding in one sketch, and there was a lack of integrity by the host in interviewing somebody. He didn't give them a chance to speak. And it was, we both looked at each other and thought, I don't want to watch this anymore. Even though I agree with what is being said. It took such a tone of divisiveness, you know, against the other point of view. And I thought, I don't want to be involved with this. And we actually haven't watched the show for about 3 weeks now, which is quite unusual because it's, you know, something I used to enjoy. But it was like, I can't buy into this anymore. You know, it's feeding, it's not the solution. It's reactive to the problem. And it's almost feeding on the problem, you know? And so I saw it as an unhealthy thing rather than as a needed release.
And
I think there has to be a higher way
describing.
Here, right?
So when I see moments of worship turn into hate, or moments of patriotism turn into chauvinistic hatred, it's just there's this dreadful adolescent temptation to have a temper tantrum, but that's not your higher self. As Eckhart Tolle says, how do you know you have a higher self? Because you know you have a higher self, because you're aware of it.
Right.
And it is sometimes, it's like when you're driving in the car and someone makes you really angry, you have a moment of choice. And I think that's where we are about so many things. It's really hard for me, for instance, having spent most of my life trying to help women, mostly in terms of education, but also in many other arenas, to see this backlash and the wicked things that are said about women and the evil desires to punish them and harm them and force them into compliance. And yet, that's probably one of my biggest challenges. How do I remain looking at it through the eyes of love at this and recognize what I'm really looking at is fear of change. And that's it. Fear of change is ubiquitous everywhere. But we are at a time where things are changing, and we're at a cycle of nature where things are changing. Things change in February. You know, the landscape
right.
goes, at least in my world, and certainly in Texas, the world goes from looking wintry just starting to look. I have a tulip tree here in my backyard, and this is an early time for it to bloom. And I'm really hoping that we don't have a severe freeze, because it's a glorious tree full of these fabulous pink blooms.
And absolutely.
It is the landscape, the way it looks just out my kitchen window, is very different than it looked even a week ago. And so things are changing, and you can either go with it or you can resist. That's kind of the choice that's on your plate. And if you just are all about resistance, you destroy that sense of creativity and regeneration that is available to you.
Right, and that's the key, isn't it, to the wheel of the year, is that, you know, there's constant change. You know, the French say the more things change, the more they're the same. And, of course, we come back to the same cycle over and over again, you know, because there is that continuity. But there's also that flow and that change and that surrender to the next thing, right? Not to be so resistant to it that we can't enjoy what's going on, right? Even the most uncomfortable times, there's lessons here. Into that.
It's like you said, there's a kind of, it feels like Buddhism, a kind of be in the flow, that you're in the flow. And what appeals to me about the Celtic Wheel of the Year, or really all wheels of the year, is they don't have a religious dogma. They're not monotheistic or polytheistic or... And I'm a student of different religions of the world, but it just it's a myth. It's a mythic structure that you can live in without dogma, which is, I think, probably why the neo-pagans like it. But they, too, get all hung up in all their stuff, too. So there's a temptation to start generating orthodoxy.
But right. Well, that tends to happen, doesn't it? Wherever we, you know, we start to codify things, we have a breakthrough and it's wonderful. And then we want to codify it so you can have the same breakthrough. Well, it never happens like that. And before you know it, it's dead. It's dead, you know, dogma that has no meaning, but we're still going through the motions with it. I mean, I think that happens with any religious understanding. So, yeah, we have to break through at every moment. You know, that's the regeneration, isn't it, is to see it anew, right? And nature's good at that, because it forces us to see things new, because it's ever-changing. You know, it's never. There's no dogma to nature, right? There's only the flow, the unfoldment.
Right. And there's no us and they. We're all
right.
In it. And
we're all connected.
As I say, well, here's the bad news. There is no they, there's only we. And some people find that very upsetting, but I think the cycle of nature is, that's one of its teachings. There is no they. There is no, you're not in this with me because you're of a different color, or you worship a different god. And I had an interesting discussion with one of my professors about a month ago, and we were talking about Jung's Red Book and about Jung's search for a God image. Jung believed that we create images of the divine, and I contended that we're better off without a God image, that just simply finding the divine in what appears, because if you project that God is a white male, or God is a whatever color and whatever gender, you've already said, but some of you are not in this container. But if you accept that what is divine is this extraordinary tulip tree blooming its heart out in February, it doesn't exclude anything. It doesn't say, oh, no. Tulip trees are just for Christians, or just for Muslims, or, you know, Jews. Nature is all inclusive, and there is no they, there's only we.
Right. And that's very solitary, because, you know, some of us have a hard time accepting the we and people we don't like, you know, and to be invited to behold the Christ in those people, it can be difficult sometimes, you know, for some of us, because, right. you know, they're not exhibiting the Christ, presumably, in their behavior. So it's really hard to see. But,
yes,
but we're still called upon to see that in them, right? No, regardless.
Yes, and it's not, Unity talks about seeing the Christ in people, and I'm fine with that, but we don't mean seeing the Christian in people.
Right, good point.
What we mean is seeing a divine spark.
Yes,
you could also say seeing the Buddha, or you could say seeing the goddess, or, you know, what we're talking about is seeing that divine connection of being human. Or at least that's my interpretation of unity, is that it doesn't say, and if you're not a Christian, you're out.
Right, exactly. Absolutely not.
We don't take that stand.
Right, we don't.
As far as I know, maybe there's some who do, but I'm not one of them.
Well, no, yeah, I think you're right. The Christ represents that. The things you talked about, you know, the divine spark within each of us. You mentioned the goddess, you know, and there's some understanding in recent times that, you know, the time of the male god is over, you know, and we're returning to this understanding that God as in a feminine aspect, as it was, you know, in a more agrarian ages, right? And that this is a healthy way forward. And I don't know if it has to be exclusively feminine, right? We can have gods and goddesses. I like Hinduism a lot because the interconnection, you know, of the male and female energies, the potentials and the energies that seem to reflect a more deeper understanding of the world, right? That there's that dance of the two forces. But I think it is important, isn't it, to uplift the goddess as an aspect of the divine, you know, it's been denied for so long.
Yes, and that's an interesting field of study to try to figure out how we got there. When I was writing my dissertation, I talked about how bizarre it really was that the Trinity is the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, which for most of us, we had a mother and a father, not a Holy Spirit, you know. And there's this kind of, I think it's fear of the feminine, but the book I'm working on right now is a kind of encouraging of the letting go of the notion of gender and letting go of the notion of dualities. Jung was very much a fan of dualities and quadrants, but as I've worked in this, I've ultimately come to the conclusion that as we recognize that we all came from an egg and a sperm, that we all had a mother and a father, and they had mothers and fathers, and they had mothers and fathers, and to look at ourselves and define ourselves by a gender is probably a mistake. And that when you are off, when you find yourself not in alignment with, say, you say, the candle of your higher self, sometimes the place to look is to find the feminine within. And sometimes, this is hard for me, but sometimes the place for me to look is to find the masculine within. And that's difficult for me because I recognize, if I spend this time of the year looking, that people like the kind of Me Too and the Harvey Weinsteins and so many, that I'm drifting into a sort of anti-masculine place. And I really need to true up to, hey, I had a dad. I had grandfathers. I am a human, and that means I am all of it. And it changes archetypal psychology a great deal when you start saying, you have it all. You have all of those archetypes, the sooner we stop going, well, the mother archetype or the Demeter is a feminine archetype, and this is Zeus is a masculine archetype. Actually, I have it all, and so do you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that's important. Because there are some out there that, you know, is advocating for the Black Madonna and all this feminine stuff so much that they've sort of jettisoned the idea that, you know, the masculine is there and, as well. And I like Shiva Shakti myself, you know, if you're looking at Hinduism, because Shiva was the sort of potential of everything, but Shakti was the energy out of which the universe was created. And so incredibly important Mother Nature, whatever. But then there's also the quiet potentiality of pure spirit, you know, beyond that or within that, I should say. And that's comforting to me, you know, that there's those forces right. and that potentiality are one and the same. So, but it's a subtle point. And I think the sun actually in the Father, Son and Holy Ghost is feminine, you know, personally, because it represents essentially love, right, and compassion. So I think if the Trinity has a feminine aspect, it would be the sun. And of course, don't tell that to a fundamentalist Christian, you know, that Jesus was actually a woman. That might not go down.
That's exactly what we're talking about. But actually, if Jesus was a human being, he did have a mother and he did have a daddy and he come from an egg and a sperm. And so did we all.
Yeah.
So it's
I think the exciting thing here, Priscilla, is that we are able to question everything, not in a dismissive way, but in a way that says, you know, let's look again, let's examine these things. Nothing is written in stone, right? There's a fluidity to things that could be deeply meaningful if we can but look, you know, if we can kick over the traces and say there's always a new way of approaching these things. And that, to me, is very healthy.
I agree. And I think that's, to bring it back, that's the lesson of Imbolc, which is look again. There's another tree blooming, and there's another daffodil coming up, and there's another spring coming in your life. But it isn't like anyone that ever came before. Look at it with fresh eyes, with the eyes of a child, or the beginner's way, however you want to say that. And when you find yourself drifting into, I'm this and I'm not that, and I don't like people who are this way, and I have to fight these people, you can true up on a sort of sense of wonder and new beginnings that come with this time of the year.
Yeah, I love that.
It isn't always easy. It's very hard for me to see the right wing male as my brother. That's a challenge for me, I admit.
Yeah. If people want to know what Imbolc means, what does it mean? The word.
The word means use milk. It comes from, I used to know this better than I'm recalling, but the word, it had to do with the fact that the ewes were pregnant and at this time of the year and were beginning to give birth. If you talk about animals and plants, this is an animal part of the cycle. And once you begin to have sheep delivering, little sheep, baby sheep, whatever those are called, lambs, I guess, you have a renewal of the food cycle. So
right. That's
kind of one of the first things, you have milk and you have the renewal of animals. Because in the fall, when you have swine, you decide what you're going to butcher and what you're going to try to nourish through the year and which ones of these animals you're going to try to keep alive and have produce another generation for you. So it's beginning to bear fruit bear babies this time of the year as well.
Right.
So
okay.
It's kind of, yes, you will live. You will live. There's
right.
food again.
Well, this has been a fascinating show. we're coming towards the end. We'll have to have you back again so we can talk about other aspects of the year. You know, we got May Day coming up, and then we've got a fascinating time of the year, around the August.
Sexy Beltane, it's coming.
Yeah, and then the 1st of August. I was born on August 6th, so I'd be fascinated to know a little more about that particular time of the year.
Maybe
we can talk some more. We have 1 minute, less than a minute left. What words of wisdom would you give to our listeners today?
This is the time to look within, steer by your highest self. That's your candle.
Beautiful. Well, folks, I hope you found some inspiration here. I have. I'm going back to the Wheel of the Year myself. I've got a chart of it here on my desk that I've been looking at. There's something deeply satisfying about it, in the sense that it's part of the flow. It's not just out in nature. I am nature as well, so it's flowing through me, and that's fascinating. Let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll say goodbye to Drusilla. Next week, my wife Wendy joins me, actually, and we're going to discuss healthy partnerships for enlightened living. So join us then, how to find more meaning in relationships, all part of that work on meaning. Thank you, Drusilla.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure.
And thanks for listening, folks. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.